So this is our little session on our optimism in the retail sector. And in preparation for this, I was going through some numbers here. And one of the ones that I came up with is one that I shared with Carr, and that is that a real anomaly is that our first half of 2012 is actually higher than our last half of 2011. And the second half of the year tends to be the dominant half of the year. The fourth quarter is usually where we all make hay. But things have improved to the point that we have the first half of a year being stronger than the fourth quarter and the third quarter that preceded it.
And those were in point, and also that with the DC 52, that was a pretty strong third quarter too.
Right. Yeah, in the third and fourth quarter with the launch of New 52 and everything that happened with that, those are pretty big numbers to get over. So the thing is, okay, yeah, we're optimistic. What do we do with that, and where do we take it? With that, what I'm going to do is we have Callum Johnston from Strange Adventures in Halifax, Nova Scotia. We have Thomas Gall from Corner Store Comics and Beach Ball Comics and AmazingToys.com. And Cardiangelo with Earth 2 Comics in Sherman Oaks and Northridge. And I've got a little store up in Concord, California called Flying Colors. So let me throw it open to you guys. What are you doing to stay optimistic about this market and to keep the thing going? What are some of the things that you're doing that kind of look down the road a little bit, maybe, rather than looking behind and saying, wow, that was a great first half of the year? What are we doing for the second half?
We're using this boon to kind of focus on events and community, so that when, you know, if and when this doesn't necessarily stay a natural high, we've actually built in some loyalty into the people to maybe keep them on for a longer period of time, you know, opposed to what we saw, you know, a couple decades ago, where as soon as everyone figured out that they weren't going to retire on the all the brigade number ones that they bought, that they just disappeared. So we're kind of looking to make it a place that they want to continue to come, even if we lose some of the hype.
I think that's a really good point, and particularly since we've got this sort of onslaught of social media, and what's going on online also is affecting what's happening in our stores, that being points of social contact and really building community is an incredibly important thing to do at this point.
But how do you do that? I mean, are you paying someone with all, you know,
you don't necessarily have to. I mean, there's been guerrilla marketing concepts going on for the last, you know, 15 years, and you don't even have to go to that extreme at this point. I mean,
part of the fun is a lot of the staff enjoy the Facebook, you know, and they're empowered to take the funny pictures in the store and to, you know, here's our customer of the week, you know, or here's, you know, Bob buying this really cool back issue, and just, you know, doing things like that, and they're empowered and having fun doing it. So, I mean, we are paying people to do it. We're just adding a job responsibility to what they already do. And they're, and the staff, in addition, are the people that are really interacting with the customers on a daily basis. So having them be more of the face of those social media things is great. If it's just me, I come across just like an old man who's always just talking about 70s comics, and that's going to bore people.
As an example, to build into what both Carr and I were saying, for the Walking Dead thing, we have a local customer at one of our stores who's great at sketching. We brought him in for the Walking Dead event to do sketches for people, and we brought in another ex-employee with a friend to do zombie makeup, and we bought a cake for $32, and we spent almost, and we got a food truck come out. We spent We essentially spent $32. And we ended up with 150 people in our store, and we sold almost 500 copies of Walking Dead. And the sketch guy ended up having to stay until 2:30 in the morning because the line was going out the door from the time we opened at 10 o'clock. And that in and of itself is great in building community. To Carr's point, the bigger part of that was the next day he was posting pictures, and the people that had the sketches were posting pictures, and we were, you know, putting pictures of the people from the... We had 30 people show up in costumes. We had, you know, and so you start putting these people out there, and if they're fans of your site and you can tag them, all of their friends are now seeing it and all of that, and it's basically you're expanding way beyond even what you got for the event. So whether it's 150 people or 30 people, you have the ability to get that exposure out to multiple times that number of people for almost no investment.
And it's very important, too, I find, when that it's not all coming from the store, that a lot of the events or any of the fun activities you get going or someone finding a really cool comic, we always encourage people to let us know what you thought of the comic. But they'll send out something, so it's, you know, a customer or a friend of yours or just a complete stranger who finds something interesting in your store or in comics in general, posts it on their Twitter feed, on their Facebook, that then is getting out to people. There's a lot of effort you put into trying to get new folks into comics in general that you may not see the return right away, but it's growing. You know, you will see it over time. It's a matter of trying to take a bit of a longer view with, in many cases, a very small investment. One of the things we did a few years ago was start some ladies' nights where we close the store to the boys. I sit in the bar next door and host any of the fellows who come by, and it's after hours, a two-hour event. We only advertise through our Twitter and Facebook. We fill the store with about 150 girls who come by. It's all run by our female staff, and we do a Wednesday from 7 till 9, you know, in terms of sales. And it's phenomenal. The response you get, where, you know, it's really an outreach to try and get folks to try something new, to come with their friends, and half your customers, the female customers you have, turn into your salespeople because they're talking to other people about what their favorite book was, what their favorite comic series was. You know, and it just brings them back again and again. And then all of them went out and start talking about what a great time they had or what a cool book they found, and it just spreads the word more and more.
That's excellent.
I'll
tell you all about it.
Of the increase in sales, how much do you think is attracting new customers? And of the new customers you're getting, how would you describe the breakdown in terms of age, sex, etc.?
In my case, it's all over. We're seeing kids and teens and adults. We're getting in small group, largely because of our ladies' nights. We're getting in groups of teenage girls. Five or six little clusters will come in on a Saturday or a Thursday afternoon, and yes, they're picking up the new Sailor Moon book, but they're also trying Batgirl, they're trying Wonder Woman, they're trying Batman.
Or they're buying Vader and Son because we were, you know, ordered that, or they're buying other weird stuff, the Reasons to Punch a Dolphin. You know, some of these books that are just, if you're looking at, you can even go in and look at some of like Amazon's top 50 books, and you can pick out things that are actually going to appeal to a comic customer base, even though they're not comic books that you don't necessarily ever have any purview to otherwise, and you start to add those things, and it incrementally says, hey, I went to this comic shop. It's not just a comic shop. You need to come in and see this because they've got stuff for everybody.
Well, that's definitely one of the things. One of the things that we've seen, I recommend if you don't have a POS system, you should have a POS system. Whether it's, you know, Diamonds, we use Mobi. But one of the things that we can run, like sales comp reports, and not only do I see how the per transaction, you know, has changed. Oh, okay, it used to be $25, now it's gone up to $27. But more importantly, seeing just that traffic increase on a weekly basis that we're having in our Northridge store in particular, we are having an incredible it's college, so it's always been kind of transient, but the number of just people buying things in the store each week has gone up, you know, 30, 40, some weeks it's 50% over the last year. And these I just don't know where all the, you know, it's not like this community really changed, but somehow people are finding us. And when I talk to other retailers, I know we're not just taking people from, I hope you're having as good a time as we're having. One of the guys who's just like a mile away. So it's not like, the pie has gotten bigger. I mean, that's, you know, we're not just taking each other's customers, and the things we're trying to do, sort of what Thomas said, is offer, besides the comics bring people in, things like Saga, you know, by Brian Vaughn. Now, I originally, you know, thought like, okay, this is going to be a book that, you know, we did, you know, if I could, I looked at it as if I could go back in time and order as many Y number ones as possible, how many would I order? So I could have that for, like, the run of 60 issues of Y is sort of what I was thinking. And I kind of...
Still came up short, didn't you?
I probably still came up short. I still have my... I still have Saga number one. So on that level, I am happy, but I'm not going to have it at Saga 60 or whatever. But the most interesting thing about that, and what I did misjudge, is that a lot of the people coming in for Saga never read Y.
Yep.
So then it's... And it's important to... You know, have this community and have these conversations, because then you have to go, I have to make sure. And now, where I'd say there was kind of a, you know, Fables has always been kind of, I always compare Fables and Y in my mind, because of the time they came out. But Y, The Last Man, had kind of stabilized. But now I see I'm back in the process of, oh, I need to, you know, not quite at Walking Dead levels, but I need to have a bunch of number ones, a bunch of number twos, a bunch of number threes, because people are starting to work through it again. Because the people who read Saga, the question I get asked more than anything is, what else is like this?
Yep.
You know, and if you go, gee, I don't know, there's nothing else like that. It's so unique. Yes, it's so unique, but you need to recreate that experience. And, you know, and broadening different product lines, you know, if, you know, finding the things, we, you know, and especially a lot of our staff, too, and myself, you know, we love Doctor Who, so all these different, you know, Who products that are out there, anything shaped like a TARDIS is kind of gold, you
money
know, right the, now.
Money in the bank.
You know, and buttons and magnets and different things from all, you know, from different vendors like Attaboy, and, you know, at the suggestion of, I think I got... You're the one who said it to me first about a button maker. You know, you can buy button makers and make your own buttons. And again, that's something that we've been doing. And my wife over there, Susan, has been the button captain. But you know, making
those strip cover returns. You strip the cover, you keep the interiors, you make some buttons.
Is that legal? Yeah.
If you're giving them away.
But I've got like old, you know, old Wizards.
Old
you
Wizard
know,
magazines.
Old Wizard magazines. Old Marvel previews.
Marvel
I mean,
previews,
old,
yeah.
You know, comics that are damaged and can't be, you know, and can't be sold. It's, you're not making a copy of it, but it is, you know, it's fine to repurpose the way people make wallets out of magazines and, you know, those kinds of things. But just, you know, but what it leads to is, like Thomas was saying, we have a guy who bought a button and then tweeted about it because it's, you know, it was a Gwen Stacy button that he could only find, you know, that we're the only place that had it because we, you know, made it in our back room. So, you know, so just adding, create, you know, I said this to someone the other day, and I said, if every comic store only sold all the new comics that were out and all the new trade paperbacks were out, then we would all have the same store. And that wouldn't be good for any of us, because if we're all equal in that way, what keeps us all alive? And again, with our fan base, you know, I never resent customers who say, well, I was over at so and so's before. You know what? That's who I was when I was growing up, and before I had a comic book store, I went to every store I could, and those people wind up spending a lot of money because they go to every store and they spend at every store and they want stuff. So it's about, you know, finding reasons and, you know, to bring them to your store. And like I said, and don't underestimate the value of cake, because I was surprised with that too.
Cake or $5 Little Caesars pizza. It's a brilliant
cookies.
Investment.
Cookies.
Absolutely.
Proportionally, where is your money going? So we've got this, we've got an investment in cash. Are you putting it more into indie comics? Are you putting it more into stuff that's offside comics like Vader and Son? Are you putting it more into merchandise like buttons or anything? Is there one category more into everything?
No, I think you have to keep a balance.
Yeah.
I mean, because if you put all, it's a question of putting all your eggs in one basket, mm-hmm. which unfortunately kind of became the dangerous paradigm when comics were down. If you only carried comics and trade paperbacks and that those categories were down, you're not doing yourself any favors. So if you keep that money going across the balance, you've always got a product lines that are up while others are down, and then you can actually stay viable.
Well, and the other part of it too is taking a look at with a good point of sale system, taking a look at what's actually selling, what categories are really strong, and then seeing which categories you'd like to beef up and maybe take a little bit more of a flyer on and see if you can't build something better. We have a tendency to look month to month at these numbers and say, well, the numbers as a whole are this, but then you really have to break it down and look at some of the micro numbers of how things are trending and what categories are working and which ones aren't. And also, in a group like this where retailers can talk amongst ourselves and say that, you know, this store is doing 60% of its business in the book end of comics, well, you know, and I look at my store and we're doing 30% of our business in books. What are they doing that I'm not doing, or what am I doing that they're not doing to be able to sell so many periodicals? I think a lot of that speaks to how we each customize our own stores and bring something unique to it.
I think a lot of that is geographic, too. I've got two stores that have completely different breakdowns of what their sales look like. One does 30% in books, and the other one only does like 15% in books. One does 70% in comics, the other one only does 40% in comics. So I don't know that we have access to all the same products at both stores.
Right.
So I think sometimes it's maybe the people that are working for you and the clientele that they're developing, based on where you're located, I don't know.
I'd like to touch on that for just a second. It kind of goes without saying, I guess, but with all these new people that are coming into our store, I'm getting a lot of questions. Questions from all over the place.
Questions are good. Questions lead to sales.
So key to things. And it's really huge for me and my staff to be able to answer those questions. Like you said, if you say, well, I don't know, it's just really cool. That's not going to sell a book.
Right.
But if your people know what's out there and know what they like to read and can recommend things they think are cool, they're turning the people walk in not really knowing what they want. And you can get a lot of information from those people, and you can really turn that into
We started a program a couple months ago where we actually have a sign-out sheet, and all my people can take home new books on Tuesday night. They get to choose what they want. They sign it out. One of the other people signs them out for them. Someone else signs them back in so I can actually keep inventory control. And even the people that don't work on Tuesdays come in to get their books. And now when someone walks in the store, they've actually got two to three different people that have all read 5 to 8 different things and are already up to speed on what's new, what's bad. Every single person picks a new staff pick that's prepped and ready for the TVs first thing Wednesday morning when they walk in. If someone, you know, if... I'm sorry?
Are those paid hours?
They just love the fact they get to read the comics for free. So it's a trade-off, you know. And if they don't want to do it, they don't have to do it. It's voluntary. They want to do it. And so when someone comes in and Darren's staff pick says that he liked mind management, now they come in every week and they look at the TV to see what Darren, even if Darren's not in the store, they look to see what did Darren recommend this week because they put him onto a book that they absolutely loved.
Yeah, we have staff recommendations like that in our newsletter, and now people follow that guy's reviews every week, and it totally helps.
And I think that is a big thing, especially with the day early delivery. I mean, I think that's certainly helped over the last, you know, year and a half. Especially because that was the biggest question on Wednesday mornings that most of us did not have an answer to. When we had just unloaded the boxes or we were unloading late the night before and we didn't have a chance to read everything. Is this Batman issue any good? I hope so, you know. But at least, you know, if you've looked at things and read things, you can point to, oh, that was really cool. Or that was, you know, you don't want to miss this issue or... You know, these two issues tie in, and it really doesn't say that on the cover, but you don't find out until, you know.
That comes back to product knowledge that just everyone should be trying to keep abreast with as much as possible. And, you know, even, I know it's a struggle sometimes to make it through some of the books and comics that come in each week, but it's such an important facet because having that knowledge helps sell the books so much easier. I don't know if one thing I wanted to point on was... The non-customers who are in your store are the ones I always approach. When you have a group of people coming in, if you have any products that really appeal, did everyone carry the Cat Getting Out of a Bag book?
Oh yeah, that's
from Chronicle Books. Is anyone not familiar with that book? It's a small little hardcover this size by Jeffrey Brown, the critically acclaimed crybaby. and it's a relief cover. And it was a collection of his strips.
So little, the same, is that the same guy for Vader's
Vader and Son?
Yeah.
These are his previous books. There's two of them, Cat Getting Out of a Bag and Cats Are Weird and Other Observations. And the little hardcover, it's a $12.95 from Chronicle Books. Diamond has them, but you can usually get them faster through a book distributor, but Diamond does usually carry them. They've got a relief cover, so it's very tactile. As soon as you hand it to someone, they're feeling it already. It's just got a nice feel. And anytime people were coming in the store last fall, I directed all of our staff to just hand the other people this book, because that gives the real customer more time to shop when their friends are comfortable. Everyone has a cat or knows someone who has a cat, and every one of those people flip through it. They're mostly pantomime strips. They start laughing because it's something very familiar to them. Invariably, they would buy the book or at least, you know that it's there and then tell someone about it. And it was just a huge hit for us.
Bunny suicides like that, too.
Yep. Yeah. You know, something that really has a broad appeal, that when you have the person who's looking for something, they don't often need help. It's the folks who are waiting for them that I like to approach, because if you can entertain them, you're going to have the other person in your store longer to browse, and you'll make a better sale. Having a couch or a seat. We used to have one where it had a little sign, you know, for moms only, just so they're comfortable. More and more stores are having a seating area. I got the idea from women's clothing stores, because they would have a chair by the women's dressing room, because if the boyfriend or husband or father was comfortable, the girl had more time to shop, and that led to more sales. The other product I wanted to mention was everyone sells Walking Dead. If you're not selling Invincible in close to that number, order some of the Destroyer trade paperback from Marvel. Right now it's on sale from Marvel for $1. And it's written by Robert Kirkman. It's drawn by Corey Walker, who's the original artist on Invincible. It's violent as hell, and it's a great sell to the folks who are reading Walking Dead. Here's a short four-issue, one-and-done book. Very violent, about a superhero who's retiring and he's worried about his family. He wants to make sure that they're taken care of, so he sets out to get rid of all of his loose ends. And the Walking Dead fans eat it up, and then from there it's a very short jump to getting them try Battle Pope or Invincible, and then you've got them buying two different series on an ongoing basis instead of just the one. You know, that sort of, as Carr mentioned, sort of finding the family tree, you know, where if you like this, you find something else to get them into. So you get them visiting a little more often. They have more books around their house. It leads to, we have a saying, rising tide floats all boats. The more people reading comics, the better it is for everybody. Whether they get them digitally or at the library or at your comic store, you will see them at some point. You know, so it's, I really find it's important to view other comic shops as your colleagues, not as your competitors. I know that's difficult in some areas, because you'll have some guy who's just very voracious and trying to pull all the business to him. Hopefully, you know, that's his ship. It's not yours. You know?
Since you mentioned the D word, digital, I also wanted, I think one of the things that's also changed in the last couple of years, and I'll admit I was sort of, you know, part of this, you know, questioning as well, as I think a couple of years ago it really was a question, what was the effect of digital going to be? And I think, you know, 2 years later, I think it's there, it exists, it has a customer base, but that we've seen that, you know, it's sort of a, but it seems to have been a peaceful coexistence, and maybe in some cases it actually has, you know, transfer, you know, brought in, you know, I know I've experienced customers who say, oh, I started, you know, because of the new 52 or because of something else. They looked at digital comics, but they wanted more. And again, one of the things the digital comics experience did not give them was someone to answer their questions. You know, and it's also what happened with the bookstores. We had a Borders, I mean, they closed, but we had a Borders 2 blocks away that used to send people to us at, you know, when they got to the third question with the guy at Borders, he would say, go to Earth 2. Because I can't, you know, I can't tell you what order to read these Green Lantern books in. I don't know.
General question, specific question. You got to go to the store.
And I think so. Even people who are finding, you know, because you know, the digital apps, I mean, are, you know, if you don't know what you're looking for, it's very, I just want to read a Batman story. Well, according to, you know, DC Comics, there's 716 of them, and now an additional, you know, 7, you know, or whatever. So it's how do you pick where you're going to, you know, start with Batman? So we're still sort of those gatekeepers.
Amazon has that great bit where people who bought this also bought that. That's their best thing on their website. It's probably our most dangerous thing. But that's where we can come in and compete.
Oh, I actually have probably used that more than their customers do, because I think it was Andrew that suggested the five very good reasons to punch a dolphin in the nose.
Right, right.
Or a bunch of dolphin mouth. I went to Amazon and looked it up, and then looked to see what the other people were buying, and then I started ordering all those books.
Those books, yeah.
So, I mean, I use it just the way that their customers do, and I sold out every single one of those other titles that we ordered as a result. So
we've got a lot of money going right now towards Variant Comics. Variant Comics are making retailers a lot of money. So we're starting to see an upswing, we're seeing more and more variants. We're starting to see what we've seen before. What are you doing to kind of safety-proof your stores from that bubble and that crash that we went through in the mid-90s, early 90s?
I don't know that we're seeing more. There are a lot of variants that we're just not ordering because they don't sell. I think it comes down to not every variant equals money, and being up enough on your business to know what your customers might actually be interested in, and just ordering the ones that make sense.
Right.
I mean, we rarely...
Well, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you're, like, more than 5 years ago, you're making more money on side variants than you were 5 years ago, things like that. So you've got money.
That's partially the same market, but I think mostly a different market too. There are people who are just hounds for that stuff, and they don't necessarily 100% cross over into people who are buying the regular books. What I've tried to do in my entire time in this business is manage both for the growth and manage for the safety net of when the bottom falls out of the market. I wasn't left with thousands and thousands of copies of Brigade Number One because I didn't order thousands of copies.
Why not?
Yeah, right. Our policy has always been that you, unless you put an order in advance, you can't get anything more than 3 copies off the shelf of any item. And what that does is it just allows us to manage our inventory better. Some people may have other ways of dealing with that. I think every store is run different. A lot of that comes down to, again, the point of sale, is looking to see what's selling, what's not selling, and trying not to make the same ordering mistakes, because we can make ordering mistakes on variants just as well as we can on anything else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think the big thing with the variant money is to not expect that to be a regular thing. If you're making any money at selling variants, don't expect to do so next year or the year after. It's
icing, not cake.
Yeah, it's definitely the icing.
And you know, and I know there's you know an issue like when you know Marvel offers you know certain really deep discount incentives or certain things, and people have complained about it's a lot of math. I think you can be rewarded for doing that math. I mean, and even if it's something like Walking Dead 100, and there's a 1 in 200 variant. You know, to take 5 or 10 minutes and just write out a scenario where you think you're going to sell the one in 200 for X. How much of that then? What does that do to the price of if you deduct that from your cost of goods, maybe you've essentially given yourself an effective 70% discount on those regular other issues of Walking Dead, and then maybe it's worth. Getting more of the different covers, and because it is number 100, et cetera, and at least you've minimized some of your risk. I mean, and what we've been trying to do is look at it that way, as opposed to rarely am I ordering up to. If I'm going to order up to a variant, I need to know that my cost is going to be covered, as opposed to maybe if I sell it, if I sell that and I sell all these issues, I've made the money. But you have to sort of factor in there's still going to be a ceiling on the issues. But I think Walking Dead 100 was just a good opportunity to sort of say, well, maybe and what we also did to mitigate risk on that, too, was to offer a pre-sell of the 8 covers. And there were a bunch of people who took it. And I had enough advance orders and advance prepay orders to sort of go, okay, now I don't fear buying, 400 copies.
What we did is we went one step further. We actually, for this 1 in 200, we actually gauged interest ahead of time. We priced it. You know, what do we need to sell these for to offer an open deal before FOC to say, this is what we're putting the 1-200 at. Who's interested? Commit now. And then we knew that our cost of all the books was covered just by the people that committed to the 1-200 variants. We literally paid $3.58 per set of 8 for the rest of the books. I mean, we only had to sell like 12 sets to actually break even when those books hit.
How do you get that kind of commitment? Like, how many weeks of prep did you get? Did you call people, email people?
We actually used our Facebook. We never even had to make a phone call.
Really? And they contacted you and said,
as soon as we put it up, we sold 3 of them the first day. We sold 2 more over the course. I mean, we did a deadline. I said, here's the deal. We've got a week. You need to let us know by Sunday if you want one of these variants. This is the price. If you're not interested, cool.
Card?
If you are, no.
Oh.
Didn't have to do that.
Okay.
So, and basically we went and we got this many, and I was like, okay, I'm cool with that. I'm going to order one beyond that, and that's how many Walking Dead I ordered. And, you know, we were in the black by 12:10 on Tuesday, on Wednesday morning.
Okay, they want black books too.
Is that
exactly. Do you take a risk assessment at all and go, all right, Kirk has made me a ton of money off all my trade paperback sales. It's going to cost me $800 to go 400 on this book, which is 200 more than I normally would. But if... A, Kirkman's already made me that money. This is a little payback to him, and I know he's going to make me that much money over the next.
On Kirkman, yeah, I make that decision basically, you know, a few times a year.
That's an exception, though.
You know, Super Dinosaur, Thief of Thieves.
I don't care because he covered that
right.
The day after.
No, if you look at the.
I owe Robert 200 copies. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
No. No, I agree, but similarly, it makes it also easy. It makes it easier to do that risk assessment, saying I know that it's less of a risk because obviously there's an audience and a demand for that.
But to your point, we did that pre-order on the variants, and then I went another 200 beyond that because it was your
tribute to Robert.
That was, you know what? There you go. Yeah, absolutely. That's one of my responsibilities.
Doesn't have that kind of
it doesn't take that much.
Get to know your customers, too.
I'm the most technically challenged person in the room, and I can do it. So.
It doesn't take that much to do it.
To create a cover photo.
Literally, if you've got a basic photo editing program, not even something necessarily as fancy as Photoshop, I mean, it's as simple as grabbing a picture, resizing it, putting a border on it, and having a logo ready to slap on it. It's as simple as that. A lot of our stuff is pre-built, and it's basically just plugging in the different pieces.
Even if you just have iPhoto, and you just if you can find the right graphic to resize. If there are any publisher reps here, anything you guys want to do in that cover photo size for your books is
if I don't
really
have to make it, I'm more likely to use it.
If
I don't have to do the work on it.
Suggestion up on CBIA, it was a really great suggestion. Yeah.
Yes, that's.
Well, and I mean, you can't put a price on being friends with all the people that are actually doing all these things because it reminds you as a retailer that didn't think ahead. Oh crap! That's right. I should start promoting that in my area. And
so
I steal more from Larry and Zaps over on the East Coast. Than from the guys around my area.
But also get to know your customers because you may have a designer in your customer base who for an extra book a week might help you out with something like that.
Okay, so I want to kind of circle back around to this the overarching theme here of retail optimism, retailer optimism. And I want to ask questions of the audience here. And a show of hands, number one, how many retailers are in the room? Okay.
Just a couple.
Put your hands down if you are a Comics Pro member. Leave your hands up if you're not. Okay.
If you're not a Comics Pro
member. If you're not a Comics Pro member, okay.
Here's the pitch.
Okay, so there are benefits to being in the group, and it's definitely paying for... The cost of membership definitely pays for itself. Some of these kinds of discussions go on in that forum all the time. And the kinds of idea sharing. But what I want to do is I want to turn it over to you. How many people are having, well, let's put it this way. Okay, we've got the second half of 2012. How many people forecast the second half of 2012 as being better than the first half of 2012?
It'd be tough to beat May, though.
Yeah.
It was pretty huge. It was amazing.
Okay. How many of you had your best month ever sometime in the last 6 months?
Every month.
Yeah, May was insane.
Okay, yeah, it was. Okay. What are some of the stories that you want to tell everyone about how things are looking in your business and where things are going? Where do you see the market going? And how do you maintain the optimistic look on things?
Dennis.
I put this on the CBIA, and I was actually going to tell this to you right before you got dragged out to go come here. I have one of my customers, longtime customer, the kid's 13 years old through 20 years old, he's been a customer, months after I opened the store. And I hired him, like 6 months ago, right, just to do some little part-time sorting for me. And his mom came in, and I'm friends with his mom, so she comes in with him when he was a kid. And she's like, happy anniversary on Free Comic Book Day. And I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, well, 7 years ago, this was, I was taking Logan. His dad named him after Wolverine. So he was already destined to be a comic book geek. She's taking him to go buy a futon across the street. We just opened 2 months earlier. I threw a couple people in costumes on my first Free Comic Book Day out in front of the store and holding up a Free Comic Book Day sign. And they came in. He signed up for a poll. He was 7 years, a 30 to 50 a week customer for 7 years, and I didn't realize I got him on a Free Comic Book Day. The only reason I got him at that point in time was
that sign,
Free Comic Book Day. And then I just, the evil maniacal money counter that I am, I just started rolling that 30 to 50 a week for 7 years into my head, and I'm like, my God, I paid for every Free Comic Book Day for the last 7 years off this kid, and probably the next seven.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't put a price on that. And it really changed
you
my
just
attitude.
Did.
Well, yeah, you can.
So how many people are expanding right now? Expanding stores, new stores. Besides, so we've got several people opening more stores. We get a lot of stories like that. We get a lot of stories about people, a lot of new people opening stores and people opening new locations.
You have a new store.
Yeah.
Yes. Talk about retail optimism. Yeah. Opening stores is very looking forward, looking positive.
Right. Well, it's a great time to do it with the new 52 money and the ABX money and the, all the things that are happening right now is a really great time because it's easy to reorder. Oh, thanks for keeping those in stock, Bob, by the way.
Yes.
That's been a big help. Yeah. With
and
new
not
store.
AB, you didn't mean ABX. Setting a good example with the new 52 bit of help.
It really helps shipping new locations to be able to go backwards on
that. Any other stories? Yeah, Joe?
I don't have a specific story, but the thought that I'm having here I want to share, one thing, is we're up, of course, I don't think there's anybody in this room who doesn't have the right approach to customer service. Those people aren't here. People who are not members of Comics Pro, but who are here, who want to find out more, how many people in this room have been in business less than 3 years? Okay, I applaud you. So the rest of you will know what I'm going to ask. How in God's name can you be here? Who the hell is running your store? I know who's running my store, but you've been in business less than 3 years, and you have enough confidence in your staff to leave them so you can be here.
Well, in our case,
wait, what's your name?
Will.
And where are you from?
New Mexico.
New Mexico?
No, Mexico.
Oh, Mexico.
Puebla, Mexico.
Well, you're crazy in the first place. So how many staff do you have?
Three.
And they've been with you the whole time?
One of them has been with us almost for a year.
Okay, we'll talk more later. But my point here is the first thing I did was give my staff a raise when we started getting money. Because they see me working hard, sure, and all that stuff. But we all know if you don't take care of the people who run your business, we got nothing. We're all here because we have somebody we have enough confidence in who sold Walking Dead 100 this week in our store.
Right.
Excuse me. Right? How could I not be there this week? Jesus. So the point I was going to make, you were talking about staffing earlier and how we make recommendations and stuff. They're working their ass off for us. So, and I still aren't paying them enough. But we have a little extra money, you know. I'm a small one operation. I'm not going to expand all kind of stuff. So that was my point. But the story I was going to tell here, too, is cautious optimism. I've been in business 36 years. I sold Pokemon when I sold 50 Gs 1 year and nothing the next year.
Yeah.
So put some away. Plan for how you're going to carry over for when Walking Dead is no longer it or whatever it is. And I don't mean the good part of this, though, is at the time I was selling Pokemon, we were not part of the entertainment pie to the extent we are. We are not just fringe now. We are really in the mainstream of entertainment. So when people come to us for our expertise, you know, the people we have know what they're talking about. Even when this thing dies down, when the wave passes, we're still going to be identified as an entertainment center rather than a collectibles place for just a few weirdos that like to sell online. And that's the biggest difference that I see in the cautious optimism I'm talking about. The economic swings will come and go, but we're still a bigger part and will continue to grow as a bigger part as Hollywood discovers more of our material to make more movies and games and TVs and all that kind of stuff. So that was my story.
Thank you.
Do you have another question?
Yes, well, maybe when you want to give something to your staff, well, for example, we give them a discount. So they...
So you get your paycheck back.
He buys more of what we pay him.
Yeah. Well, I know on that, the owners of Samurai aren't here. We're two of the managers. We get a pretty decent discount, and I know as soon as previews comes out, I'm special ordering for myself and probably giving them my paycheck back.
Yeah, a good way to thank the staff, though, is, I mean, treat them well. Take them out for dinner now and then. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure they're involved.
A couple of boxes of donuts occasionally.
Well, yeah. I find it's really a good thing is about every 2 months, I like to take the staff for dinner just to sort of gauge what they're seeing as upticks, what is not moving for them, what are they having success hand-selling. Because a lot of times you're not working with every person on staff one-on-one a lot. I know for myself, I'm doing more and more office work and less on the floor. So it's really good to, you know, have a time, even if it's after hours and you're closed, and just bring in some beer and pizza, just to sort of have a bull session where you can sort of just talk about the state of affairs. Is there any problems going on? Is there any good issues they'd like to bring up?
I'd like to encourage guys to give publishers feedback. One, as I see it, people who read their comics and like what they read are the long-term survival of our business. So I come to these, and I think publishers across the board are putting out really good content right now. So at shows like this, I make it a point to go to those guys and tell them what my guys like to read and what's selling well in my store, what they don't like to read and what's not selling well in my store, to encourage them to keep producing the kind of content that they're producing right now. Because, like I say, it's the readers that keep us all going. And everybody's doing a good job at that right now. So, like I say, give them that feedback while you're here, or get a rep at that publisher or whatever, send them an email, let them know what works.
Well, let me ask another question to the group here. With things having been pretty good for the last year, how many of you have... give me a show of hands if you've increased the number of promotions and the amount of advertising you're doing to try to bring more people in. That's pretty good. Basically what that is asking, are you rolling over some of what you're making into trying to make more? And I think that's what the goal is to keep playing smart and don't let any kind of momentum die on you. Just keep on working it. Any creative promotions that any of you have run that you want to share with others, like we've been doing up here?
So last year, before Comic-Con, we did pre-Comic-Con Comic-Con because a lot of our customers couldn't get tickets. And so for every day from Wednesday to Sunday, we had different events kind of mimicking the big things at Comic-Con. And our customers loved it. We had a masquerade ball. We had a group discussion where Joe Field came and gave us a talk on digital comics. and we had a couple of self-publishers, a couple of artists do signings and stuff. People loved it. And they really got a sense of what the community's about, and a lot of them tried to get tickets for it this year. I don't think they were very successful, but it was a good thing to promote the industry and a good thing to promote our store, too.
And it what it does is it also builds a sense of community with.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. We got asked again this year, hey, are you guys going to do your pre-Comic-Con again? So like they remembered it, stuck with them. So.
And where's your shop?
Nopitas, about a little north of San Jose.
Oh, okay, cool.
Nice. Very nice.
Susan.
We did a little pop-up store. I was sort of inspired by Target. You know, how they have one designer, you know, for a month or whatever that they highlight. And there was a local artist that did these really cool graphic T-shirts that were kind of gothic that, you know, again, I ran them by the staff first. And do you guys like these T-shirts? Would you buy them? Because they're our audience, and they're going to have to sell them. And it was a local artist, so we had access to her list and her people. And so for 1 month, we featured a local designer in the store with her T-shirts and her prints. We bought them for the staff so they could wear them. And, had, you know, and we had a decent sales for that month. We brought new people in. It was just, again, that's the kind of stuff the staff likes, in addition to having, and you know, it's just a new product that they've never seen before that they didn't know about until we brought it to them.
William?
It was something they were excited to sell and be part of.
The interesting thing about this designer, too, is actually she hadn't been doing prints. I had suggested, or we had suggested, I didn't know she hadn't done them. I just said, if you have something like your art to sell as well, because whenever we have, like, artists in for signings, people will, oh, you know, in addition to getting something, people like buying little prints and stuff. And she had never done that before and brought the prints, and the prints were a huge hit. I mean, one of my favorite, like, just to sum up sort of what she does, one of the prints that... designs that she does is a skeletal mermaid. It's a mermaid, but you can like see through to her skeleton, and it's a lot of Tim Burton-y kind of things like that. But yeah, it was fun to do for a month, and it was a nice kind of just cross promotion, and it made us again gave us something unique that made people, you know, check out the store.
Yeah, you never know what's going to be in there. You wanted to create that feeling. If you could show up on Wednesday and there's a little pop up store with T-shirts you've never seen before, you aren't going to be here for very long. So get them while they're here, and just you'll see that we're always bringing something fresh and different in.
And a lot of that stuff you can find if you're at your local flea market or craft fair and you see someone making earrings out of comic books. St. Louis's Star Clipper has a promotion where they have a local art table set up every now and then where they bring in someone like a little pop-up store, set it up for an afternoon, and you can find these things. Some of your customers may be designing T-shirts, and give them an opportunity to set up in your store, sell some of their products. It's a nice little extra that they're not going to see somewhere else, and it's a free event. It's not costing you a lot of money, and it makes you a little more special to them.
We did a thing recently, and you can see some of it online. We had an event called Hulk Smash Brownie Saturday, my wife makes these cream de menthe brownies, and she usually only makes them for Free Comic Book Day every year. And they're so popular with the people who come in, we decided to do an event sort of based around them. So we had Hulk Smash Brownie Saturday. Along with that, we did another Comic Slam, which is like beat poetry, but with comic book monologues.
I love that idea.
And then we had a comics jam for people who like to draw. We did a 6-page comic. I got one of the local guys who does some pro work to do one panel to start, and then each person got 15 minutes to fill in the next panel. Because that was going on, we attracted the attention of video podcast show called the Geek Speak video show, and they came in and did a whole day's worth of shooting and turned it into like an hour-long show that you can watch on their YouTube channel if you have an extra hour to watch something like that.
Dennis. I had an inadvertent one, and I think there's a model on this that you can like shape, and my kids wanted to have a lemonade stand. I have a 6- and 8-year-old. I said, okay, you know what, that's where I started, you know, okay, we'll have a little lemonade stand out in front, and you guys get to keep all the money, even though I had to make all the lemonade. And so they started doing this, and we're between two restaurants, so we get a good pull from the grandparents or the parents of the kids. But we started realizing the lemonade stand, and I let them do it about once a week, is pulling them, and they're like, oh, okay, and they're like, my daddy owns the store, And they're like, oh, is there cool stuff in there for kids? Oh, yeah, yeah. And we started pulling more people off of the stuff. Because I'm like, my kids sell lemonade out front, make a couple bucks, you know, and then they start coming in to check the store out, and they'd be done it if two cute kids weren't sitting out front learning, you know, capitalism.
Aren't there child labor laws?
Taking the money.
It's great. Yeah.
We're new to the retailer side of things. We just opened up a store in Skokie, Illinois.
Oh.
We're
welcome.
From the publisher side. We write and draw Tiny Titans.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, great stuff. Yes.
Awesome.
And in a couple of weeks, we're going to be doing something in our store called Kids Make Comics, where we're approaching things from a different idea. We're inviting all local kids into the store, and we're going to be teaching them and drawing comics with them, and then we're going to sell them in our store. In the kids section, we're going to actually have a shelf on the bottom where they can either buy them for a quarter or borrow them indefinitely. Thing. And we want to really push this, and hopefully in your stores you can invite.
It's our first annual event.
Yeah,
we're gonna nice.
invite creators in to create comics with the kids, and hopefully it'll be another draw. Like, hopefully
we want to be like Free Comic Day.
Yeah.
That's something we're thinking of.
Oh, yeah.
That's why kids make comics.
I find for that stuff, we do a lot of classes in libraries and schools for kids making comics, and we pre-print some sheets on cardstock with six panels.
Yep.
Just to make it very, because as soon as you give the kid a big blank sheet of paper, you've seen, like, they start drawing real small. They don't.
Yeah.
So we don't want them to worry about the panels just now. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know? And right away, it's just like,
that's for
you
your
know,
little
they don't know
Jack
where
Kirby.
To begin. Well, tell me a funny story, and then they get started.
Well, we have the local library and the local school involved. Wonderful. So if it's something you guys want to do, it's kidsmakecomics.com and kidsmakecomics on Facebook, so check it out.
We have a gaming area in our store, so front part's retail and the back part, we separate it out completely from the retail area. So there's nothing, you can't merchandise that area. So we put up like a gallery that can be taken down and everything. And we hire local artists, and sometimes those are high school students or middle school students, and they get a showing in the local store. We talk about it, they can tell all their friends and their family and come in and see the showing in the gallery back in the area. And it's got frames and looks pretty nice.
I thought it was cool what you did with the fires that were going on in Colorado Springs, just to open the store up for a place for parents to drop their kids off and play games in the back, and while their parents are having to deal with some real serious stuff. But
We just recently lost a lot of homes in Colorado Springs because the fires jumped over into the area. So we posted it. We made sure to try to post it so like we're not trying to make any money. We've got free games. We've got free comics to read and take. We've got free water and this candy and things like that. If you're stressed, if the kids are nervous, they can come into the store, hang out, don't have to spend anything, just to try to be like nobody.
And part of the community.
And the deal is our stores are supposed to be the places where people just drop all the stresses of their regular existence. And the safe oasis kind of place. And that was a really cool idea.
Just to piggyback on that, one of the stores that was nominated this year that's a finalist is Akira from Madrid in Spain. In their binder, they said that currently in Spain it's a time of political upheaval, economic craziness, and that their customers tell them that it's wonderful to have a place to go to where they have some hope and some brightness. It's global. I mean, we know that that's about our stores, but I when you had said that, it just struck me that that was part of their passion, was having their customers say that.
Before you wrap today, will you run through the panels that we've got going on, or our ICANN?
Yeah, I want you to do it.
Okay. Right at 11:30, we've got Matt from Talk Cow is going to talk about it. They've got a really neat distribution idea. They've got a new idea that they're announcing. She already. Oh, and Mark Silvestri. I'm so sorry. I couldn't see you. Fantastic. So they're going to talk about a really interesting distribution idea. And then I think we break for the Diamond Lunch. So we all go over to Diamond Lunch to hear from the public.
What room is that in?
33
ABC.
And then we come back here to look at all of the Eisner videos. You can actually watch all of the videos. Joe's got them, Polenta, Joe Farraga. You can see everything that people submitted. It's a great way to see a bunch of different really cool stores and steal all the ideas you possibly can. And we do that. And then that pretty much wraps the Comics Pro programming. We do something for fans in the mentor side, where we have a mentoring program. So we do the So
And that's,
you're of course invited to it.
And that's at 4 o'clock in room 32AB.
So I should.
Okay, so that's the
yes.
Move on to our next.
Okay, we are. We're going to do the quick change up here, and thank you for your enthusiasm and your attendance. And if you haven't joined Comics Pro yet, see Amanda right there. Okay.